in association with Newsarama. Welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. It's the start of the comic book film season with the release of Iron Man and the weekend of Free Comic Book Day. And we have a guest that ties into both, Barry Levine of Radical Publishing. Now, this weekend at Free Comic Book Day, he'll be offering a preview art book that will cover a lot of the art coming from Radical Publishing, and their first two titles debuting at just a dollar this month. We'll be talking about Calibur, the King Arthur story in the Old West, and Hercules, featuring a very different take on the mythological hero. Barry Levine has had a very interesting path to comic books. It started when he was a successful rock album photographer, to years as a music supervisor of films like Driving Miss Daisy, Die Hard with a Vengeance, Street Fighter, and Judge Dredd, to becoming a film producer on Detroit Rock City, and involving himself with comic book properties like the upcoming Rex Mundi and Damnation. We'll be discussing the process of taking comic books and getting studios interested in making film adaptations, but also we'll be focusing on the new line of books Radical will be debuting this year. The conversation begins with Barry trying to explain how he started as a photographer and wound up doing comic books.
It's all part of the creative process. I mean, it's all like I always feel. It's just about imagination. If you can dream it, then you recreate it. You know, starting out at least with the opportunity, you know, when I started out as a photographer, I wanted the opportunity to do other things. I dreamt of like, hey, maybe someday I can make film, or maybe someday I can, you know, publish comic books. But at the end of the day, what I did was I focused and used each facet of my career as a photographer in the rock business. You know, I got a bunch of notoriety and I imagine I did pretty good work because I worked with some of the best bands in the world who kept coming back to me. And that allowed me, you know, a certain amount, and these guys allowed me a certain amount of creativity, which prepped me for getting into, you know, the business I'm in now. You know, it's all about visuals, you know, and story.
Mention some of the covers that you did.
I think one of my proudest cover was Shout of the Devil by Motley Crue. That was a pretty cool cover because, you know, I had been with Kiss for all those years, and I was used to doing a lot of the high concept, big sets, big lighting imagery. That really got me started in being able to understand and distinguish concepts. I mean, like we're doing now. So I used my photography to get me to the next level, which was music supervision.
Okay.
And music was always my first love anyway. So music supervision is, what do? You work with visuals, you work with, you know, language, script. You know, I have to read a script and I have to be able to say, okay, this is great dialogue. This is important dialogue. I don't want to really use a song here that works against the dialogue. I need something to embellish the dialogue. I was always one of those believers, and it gets back to dialogue and comics and everything else. I always make those correlations, is that you strip away lyrics to a song, and that song should act in lieu of a score. You know, I mean, the greatest guy in the world who does that, that uses the lyrics, is Scorsese. A lot of his movies are Goodfellas, all that stuff. He knows exactly how to use a song. He knows how to use the texture of the music. He knows how to use the lyrical quality. Sometimes people are a little bit too on the nose. Sometimes in comics, they're a little too generic in their narrative and their characters and their descriptions. Same way with songs. You've got to produce or develop songs that have lyrics that are not so spot on. You know, you need to be a little more metaphorical. And that's something we do in our comics. I always talk to my artists. Like, for instance, on one of our books, I won't mention which book it was, I said, guys, you don't have to be so exact in the writer's, direction. I mean, I've always seen the artist as the cinematographer and the writer as the director, you know, okay, in relationship to film.
Sure.
Same thing. And, you know, because that's what writers are doing. They're telling, you know, our artist, panel one, and let me have character walks into a room, 45-degree angle, splash of light against the wall. So it's like, I mean, everything I've done from photography to music, it's always brought me closer to what I'm doing now, or at least it's given me a better education in helping to where I'm at now. You know, that's very, very important to me.
I noticed from the transition from music to movies, some of the films that you were involved in, an interesting handful of films that led you eventually to comic book films, like Judge Dredd.
That's turning it right there. Judge Dredd, it's really cool because Judge Dredd was the beginning and the end of my career in music. and that led me... that led me to comic books a hell of a lot faster because, I mean, you know, I ended up with a comic book character, you know, and I really liked Danny Cannon, who I always believed in Danny Cannon. He was a tremendous eye, young, you know, just had a take on Hollywood at that age. But look at him now. I don't know if most people are aware that the same Danny Cannon helped create CSI. So the guy can do whatever he wants to do now. That's made him very wealthy. You know, but it was funny because, you know, I was excited because I was doing Judge Dredd.
Yes.
I said, now I can really, because I was embarrassed by Street Fighter.
Okay.
Okay. I've never said this, but I was. I mean, you know, it really wasn't a good film. You know, it was all over the place. You know, the music that we did was a little bit ahead of its time. You know, it was, we had Ice Cube, we had Farside, we had a lot of people that went on to do other things. But just the quality, you know, of the picture opposed to the quality of things where I had done with Driving Miss Daisy and Guilty by Suspicion and stuff like that. You know, and you know, you roll with the dice, and it's not an industry where you say, well, I'll only be able to do this picture. You got to pay your rent, you got to feed your family. You know, it's wonderful to get into a position like I did when I was a photographer. I mean, I really got into a position where I could decide who I wanted to shoot and when I wanted to shoot, and if I wanted, yeah, I mean, if I really wanted to take that band on, you know, and work with them.
Sure.
It depended, you know, some band came to me with this stupid hair idea, hair band, and said, well, I want to have, you know, be sitting on a throne and a bunch of naked women around. I'd look at them like, yeah, okay, nice talking to you.
I think photography and comic books kind of share a similarity as compared to films because I've heard, I think it was William Friedkin that I heard, and maybe a bunch of filmmakers have said this, that 1,000 things go into making a movie, and each of those have to be done to perfection for it to be a hit. If you know, one or two of those things are wrong, it'll screw up the entire production, as opposed to, as you say, in a photography situation, it's you and the subject. And certainly comic books share that as well, because you've got a writer, you've got an artist, and there's no filters, and there's less that can go wrong, because there's less creative hands involved.
Obviously, when it's your comic book, the creator's comic book, and it's your publishing company that's committed to it, and there's a quality that you want to adhere to, yeah. But then when you compare that to, you know, working on a multi-million dollar film like Judge Dredd, you know, you're just one of the pieces of the wheel. You know, you're very insignificant, you know, in that machine. You're contributing to the machine, but you're very much of an insignificant part of it. When I was a photographer, I was the machine, like you said. At the end of the day, if I fucked up, I fucked up.
Sure.
There was no one to look around and blame.
Right.
And I can tell you so many times in soundtracks, so many other influences from certain studio executives, the director, the writer even, the director's wife. She didn't like a song or recommended some other song. You know, just marketing people. Where in photography, I didn't have that. And the same thing, you know, I make the comparisons. And you know, I can't compare Judge Dredd spending millions of dollars on what we're doing. But to me, it's the same.
Okay.
You know, we're putting everything, and the artist and the writers are putting their faith in us that we know what we're doing. You know, and we have to. You know, we're not Marvel, we're not Dark Horse, we're not DC. You know, we're not releasing, you know, 20 books a month or whatever. You know, right now we're releasing one book a month, and that adds up after 8 months. And then we're going into two in April and stuff like that. So, you know, I always say less is more. I'd rather focus on the quality and make people go, wow, I remember that. That was a great story. One of the most exciting comic books that we have, I just got the outline last night, redone outline for all 6 issues. We're doing a 48-pager first issue. It's by Ian Edgington on Aladdin. That's going to kick ass. That's right up there with Hercules. Hercules was, I mean, Steve Moore really, really hit the nail on the head. He created, you know, I mean, I wasn't going to do a character that everybody knew from the TV show and from, you know, previous incarnations of films and from years down and so on. We just wanted to do something different. Just because the name is Hercules or the name is Aladdin, it doesn't mean you have to have flying carpets or you have to have some guy, like, you know, taking on an army of 1,000 on his own. I mean, they're iconic, but they're as iconic as how you interpret them.
Sure.
You know, and our Hercules is more, it's closer to Braveheart and 300, opposed to, you know, the way people remember Hercules.
Yeah, it's more and of a, it's a team book more than, it's certainly the issue that you gave me to preview. It looks like it is more of a team book. And yeah, Hercules is kind of the anchor of that team.
It is. It exactly. And there's some, you know, he's got his Magnificent Seven. You know, and you know, and I was just watching this Hercules miniseries that was on the Sci-Fi Network. And you know, that's what people, and I'm not putting it down. I mean, I'm just saying that's what people remember. You know, it was the 12, you know,
the 12 labors.
The 12 labors, you know, and that's not what I want to do. I want our stories and our art to be memorable and to be different, you know, and shake things up.
Well, and you've chosen legends that I think have room for interpretation, and you're right. I mean, certainly specifically in the case of Hercules, I mean, and I'm Greek, so I know my mythology. Where you guys take the story is after the 12 labors, after he gets Cerberus back from Hades, and you've decided on a direction that maybe hasn't been explored yet as far as the character goes.
Yeah, we have no one, and that's what inspired Peter Berg and Sarah Aubrey from Film 44. That really inspired them. You very rarely get an opportunity to say, that's the story. Most of the comic books that I've sold, the comic book is the template, and maybe they end up retaining 35%, you know, to 40% of the comic, and they stay true to the essence of the character and the story. I mean, Steve did a pretty good job, but he wrote the script, Steve Niles, on 30 Days a Night.
Absolutely.
Guys who get away with that are Frank Miller and people like that. So, you know, or what they did on Wanted, you know.
You bet. Well,
so,
you know,
I mean,
we'll see, actually. I don't know. It sounds like they've changed a few things from Mark based on what we've seen so far in the trailer.
Oh, it's too bad. Well, I really love that comic book.
Me too. And it doesn't mean that it's going to be a bad film. And I always go in with an open mind as far as, you know, Hollywood is its own animal.
Yeah, but you know what you have to do? I mean, when we take a comic book to the next level, from whether it's a video game or a TV show, but, you know, mainly the film. When we take it and try to set it up as a film, I never go in with a comic book. I can't. I've done that in the past and set them up, and they sit in development hell for the rest of their lives.
Okay.
You know, I was very fortunate with Arvid Nelson's script that we stuck together for almost 4 years, and we got Johnny Depp attached.
For Rex,
you know, that's how I met Sam Sakar.
Okay.
You know, and that was very, very, very fortunate because of Johnny's name really helped solidify the concept and validate the concept and get us, you know, get Warner Brothers and everyone else to really go, okay, let's pay some attention to it right now. They also love the story, but, you know, Johnny gives a lot of credibility, and his characters resonate with everybody.
Sure.
Everywhere.
Well, are you...
You know, he's able to take a character and just turn it inside out. So, you know, when it comes to when we go to studios, we put these beautiful packages together, actually... I'll oversee it, but it's done by imaginary friends. And like the Hercules package that we had was a big old, you know, leather bound with a copper lion's head on the cover, brownish worn leather, suede actually, with brownish worn suede. And you open it up and it had set paintings, character paintings, production renderings, and we never, ever, we did that with, and that's what got us Peter Berg. We never, and the one they did of Caliber, Sam Sakar's Caliber, was in leather with rawhide tying it up. Same thing, torn, worn pages. You know, it's all bells and whistles, but at the end of the day, it's like somebody going out and shooting like a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes of a film they want to make. Like Rodriguez did on Sin City or anyone else, mm-hmm. And we're just showing the intent of what we want to do, what we can do, what's possible, and that's what got us John Woo. I went to Beijing with that to show it to John, and he committed right then and there. I mean, he was interested before, but he was in the middle of doing an $85 million, you know, film in China, biggest, most expensive film ever, and he took like 3 hours out of his time to have lunch, sit down, and sit with Sam and talk about story and look at the imagery and meet with Edmund Chern of Imaginary. And those things help us because we always tell people, this is not the comic and this is not the film. We'll tell that to a director. We'll tell that to the writer. We'll tell it to the studio. This is a point of reference. It's a template of what could be. You know, because when you just go in with a comic book and a pitch, it just doesn't work. I mean, we've been blessed that we have been invested in by a company overseas called In Tandem Films, who just raised all the money for a film called How to Lose Friends and Alienate People. It's Simon Pegg's new film.
Oh, okay.
They really believe in what we're about, and we kind of showcased ourselves last at the Cannes Film Festival. And this year we'll be showing not a slate of our films, but three of our films that we're going to finance independently. And one of them is going to be Caliber, the John Woo film.
Oh, that's
and
great.
They've allowed us to, they've come up with a fund to pay for scripts, you know, but we're just not going to go spend money for the sake of spending it. We want to make sure that the comic book has a life of its own and sets the tone for what we can do with the film. Because if you have a shitty comic book, you're going to have a shitty film. If you have a great comic book, great art, great story, great marketing. It really sets the tone for what that can contribute and inspire. I use the word inspire and influence for the film. And
okay.
They get it. Because, listen, at the end of the day, we can all walk around saying, well, they made that comic book films out of this comic, and they made this, and they made that, and everyone is very negative about, well, we don't make comic books to make films. Listen, we're a publishing company. We have five different labels we're committed to. You know, we're committed to making great books that resonate with everybody. But we're also committed, we're not stupid, you know, when we take it to the next level. I mean, that's the whole purpose why I didn't sell anything. And I came out last year and just debuted. We're committed. We took our time and said, no, we're not going to come out in last September when we were supposed to. I want to wait until May because, you know, that's the right time. Let's take our time, make sure we develop the characters properly. I mean, we always start with character renderings, and we get the characters down solid, and we use those character renderings in our production portfolios when we go to the next level, bring in a director, a writer, or a studio. But we also use it as something to say to an artist who's doing covers or a person that's going to do the interiors, the panel. We say, okay, this is something for you to work from. You may want to embellish it, or you may want to just, you know, come up with your own complete character creation. But at least we're able to communicate rather than sitting there, well, let me see, I want a character that has these, you know, narrow eyes, a longer, more pronounced nose. It's all rhetoric, you know.
Well, now you mentioned Caliber, and I want to talk about Caliber because I liked Hercules. I loved Caliber. I thought Caliber really got to the heart of the Arthur legend, and I like the spin of putting it in the Old West. Those are the first two books, Hercules and Caliber, that you're coming out with, correct?
You know, these are two books that we've had for the past. Well, actually, Caliber I've had for almost 2 years with Sam Sakar. And it was brought to me when I was over with Dark Horse. And, you know, Mike has great taste. And you know, I mean, some of my favorite comic books come out of there.
You bet.
The Umbrella Academy, you know, I mean, they just do some great stuff. But he didn't see it the way Sam and I saw it. And he wanted to do more of a Silverado, you know, Tombstone, or John Ford. I mean, I'm not saying he was wrong, but that's not what we were looking for. So we just, you know, it was Mike's decision not to do it, and we waited till I raised the money, and Sam did all the work. You know, he wrote the scripts. We went through a couple of different artists, and we had one artist who, I won't mention him, but it just didn't work out, and we had spent, you know, more money than we wanted to, but we also said we're not just going to use this artwork because we spent the money. We made the decision to to just get rid of that art, you know, and start all over.
Okay.
And I'm glad we did, because the artwork that came in highly influenced, again the word, highly inspired Sam Sakar to take Caliber, not in a whole different direction, but moments of clarity that he had moments of clarity that he would never have had unless a certain image went that was given to him from a production rendering just went, wow, okay, I've got an idea of what I can do with the first issue right now and how we can get into the story from the beginning and not, you know, less traditional.
Well,
and Sam never wrote a comic book before, but he's a screenwriter as well. He runs development for Johnny. He's been with Johnny 21 years, and he just really, he knows story development very well. And all he needed to do was read a lot of comics, and he understood the structure, you know, of what one needs to do. Sometimes using visuals in lieu of certain dialogue.
I understand. Well, how long are these arcs for the first two books?
Caliber is 5 issues, and so is Hercules.
And our Stevens.
Where Aladdin is 6 issues, and Chrome is 6, but the reason why they're 6 because the stories on each of them, I didn't want to start Aladdin out with, you know, the traditional X amount of pages. I wanted to do it as a 48-pager.
Wow.
And have a little more backstory. I mean, when you see the way we're opening up Aladdin, you don't even think that this is Aladdin, you know, unless until you get into, like, the 5th page or so. But we did that because it was a bigger world for Ian, and the same thing for Steve Niles. I can, you know, I said, Steve, okay, this is what we can commit to for this. And he said, okay, but I really wanted to do this amount, this many pages. I said, let's just do the 1st issue. It's 48 pages. And we'll sell it, you know, for $3.99, which is a good buy for that kind of a book.
Yeah, for 48 pages, absolutely.
Yeah, you know. And he was happier. He was very happy because that got his creative juices going. You know, there's certain things that he was going to have to accept and not really be able to focus on, because you only have so many words you can put on a comic book page.
Well, tell me about the artists. Now, are all the artists coming from Imaginary Friends?
No. I mean, for the first 5 books, yeah, the artists are coming from Imaginary. But when I say coming from Imaginary is using artists from all over the world now as well. A lot of their artists are in Singapore, but they come from Thailand and China and Philippines and Malaysia, you know, and Indonesia. They have an office in Indonesia as well.
Okay.
But they're opening up an office in Bulgaria. They're opening up a studio there, and they're opening up a studio in Tokyo as well. So, I mean, they had worked with a lot of other artists in the beginning when they were young. Stefan Sajic, you know, who does all the Darkness and Red Sonja,
uh-huh.
Who actually did a cover for us, you know, for Hercules. Pretty disturbing cover. I love it.
I, of course, love the Starenko cover as well for Hercules.
The Starenko cover is so iconic, but so modern at the same time. That's what I loved about that cover. You know, it's Starenko in all of its glory, but it still has a quality. I mean, when I saw what he did with that Victorian cover, it looked like, you know, someone, you know, who was only into just really cutting-edge art would do. You know what I'm saying? Someone coming from a certain school. I mean, Starenko is a genius. He is a goddamn genius.
Oh, yeah, he's leagues ahead of everyone and has been for decades. So it is fair to say it's, at the same time, iconic and also very modern. No, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, absolutely, you know. So, I mean, yeah, and the good thing about working with Imaginary is that they take their time. Like, they know where to use shadows. They know where to have what their contrast is. They know what their color palette is, how that's going to, what works for Hercules won't work for Caliber. What works for Caliber won't work for Aladdin. What works for Aladdin won't even come near, you know, Chrome, which is a whole other style of art. You know, that's Zid. And they're doing the, but we're going to be using other people as well, but there are brothers in arms. You know, we're in business together. We're creating a one big company together. You know, Edmund Sheeran runs their company. I run our company, and we run our companies together. I'm on the phone with Edmund every morning. I get up around 5 on the phone with him every morning. We make sure that we're very, very focused with one another.
You do have other big names, you know, Yoshitaka Amano, the book that's coming out in June. Do you want to talk about that at all?
I'm excited about that book. It's so classy, just so beautiful, wonderful story. you know, I was really happy that Yoshitaka allowed Edmund Schoen to, you know, and to adapt it and, you know, to do the translation and allowed Imaginary to design the book. I mean, you know, they designed the book, but you only design what you're given, and they were given platinum, diamonds, and this is a great book. I'm glad we, I would never have even known about the book. It was only published in Japan, and he showed me that book when I was in, at his studio in Tokyo with Edmund, because I was going to do Winds of Silence, which is a coffee table book for Radical Art.
Okay.
But that's like 350 pages, and it's all done, but he was going to create another 40 original images that he was working on for it. And but, you know, Amano's got showings. He was trying to get ready for his Berlin show, you know. So I just felt that, again, we didn't want to go rush it, and this book fit us like a glove. You know, when you see the cover is very striking. It's one of the most striking covers I've ever seen on an Amano book. It says a lot. I mean, and that's the cool thing about our company. Our covers, you know, indicate what the tone of the book is going to be and the quality of the book. And our interiors also, you know, do that as well. Because a lot of times you can see covers that are wonderful and you open it up and there's complete unadulterated dog shit in between the pages.
Absolutely.
You know.
I do.
And I didn't want to do that.
No, and I have to congratulate you because based on what I see in Caliber and Hercules, there's a real high quality here for the interiors, and you've got interesting variant covers as well for these books. But I think the inside matches up quite well with the outside package in a very good way.
Yeah, and you know, in the beginning, we were like people saying, well, you know, you may want to use a few American artists because, you know, you just, I mean, it's all about design and perspective, you know, and color palette. If an artist can get the job done and he has a sense of originality, it doesn't matter. You know, I mean, we use John Bolton, you know, Bill Sienkiewicz. You know, we use Amano. I mean, we use a lot of people.
Sure.
You know, a lot of great people, and everyone knows the marquee names. But, you know, these are the next set of super, super talented artists. You know, someone has to give them an opportunity. And like I say, if they can provide you with consistency in quality, then it doesn't matter. You know, if their name is Joe Blow, you know, it's about entertaining the reader, but entertaining him with great art and great story. That's the bottom line.
Well, what's the marketing?
I fucking sound like Stone Cold Steve Austin. That's the bottom line.
One of your friends that's helped you promote Radical so far. And
I remember
last year, yeah, he was at your San Diego setup. Are you developing a project for Steve?
No. I'd like to find a project to make with him. You know, we've talked about that, and he's asked me to look for scripts. You know, and if I found the right comic book that fit his persona, I would do it. But I mean, I'm not going to go do comic books for anybody and have them look like that, or look like Steve, or look like whoever the actor is. You know, it's for a persona you're creating.
Okay.
A character. You know, the actor is one thing, the person is one, there's two different personalities, you know. I mean, I'm not about to make them look like, well, this is Stone Cold. You know, he's a good actor, really good actor, and he's going to make his mark. So I'd like to find something for him to do, whether it's something that we've created that he had nothing to do with, or something that I may go to him and say, well, what do you think of this idea, you know?
Well, what is the marketing plan then for Radical this year? I mean, I can tell you're going to be back at San Diego, but are there any other conventions you're going to hit before that?
No. I mean, well, yeah, I shouldn't say no. David Elliott, our editor-in-chief, co-publisher, he'll be in New York, okay?
Okay.
And but we're not going to have a booth there. He'll in a couple of different places he'll work from.
Okay.
And we'll be giving out some of the free comic book days there as well, books. But we're really focused on that. And then after Comic-Con, we'll hit all the others.
Okay. The two first releases, Calibur and Hercules, they both sell for $1, correct?
Yeah.
And that's a hell of a package for $1. You're getting, how many, is it 32 pages for each of them?
Yeah, 32 pages, and we're hoping to sell at least 100 copies apiece. We're going for the whole ball of wax. We're not fucking around here. We're going. If we hit 99, I'll be happy.
I call you up
like 2 months from now. I go, well, we hit 98. Not quite what we wanted, but it's okay. I can live with it.
Well, I think that Steranko cover is going to help you sell a few copies. I think that's a step in the right direction.
I did, too. We just had Tom Coker. You know Tom at all?
I know the name. Why do I know that name?
He's just done some incredible stuff. Tom Coker is wonderful, wonderful artist. He works for all the majors. Look at his stuff. And his book is so different. We have a big one being done, issue 4. One will be an imaginary. There'll be two covers for each issue of Calibur. Same thing for Hercules. We have Luis Roya doing issue number 4.
That's excellent. Wow. Fantastic.
Yeah, that's going to be very, very cool. I can't tell you what it is yet, but it'll be pretty noticeable.
So are you getting the creators that you've wanted? It reminds me of when I've spoken to Tom Jane, and he started his company and has gone out and really gotten a lot of his, all-time favorite creators to come on and either do covers for him or do interiors and do writing for him. I mean, are you getting the guys that you were hoping to get? Has it been easy for you to...
We are. I can't believe it. I've always... the Bill Sienkiewicz's and
sure.
Steve Niles and Ian Edgington and the Amanos and the Boltons, Stefan Sajic. I mean, these are all guys, or Roya, these are all guys I've always wanted to work with. And now we're getting the opportunity to work with them.
Well, I congratulate you getting Ian Edgington because I always enjoyed his Martian Invasion stories and the work that he did at CrossGen before it folded up. I think he's a guy that's just bubbling under the surface and just hasn't found that right project to make him a household name.
Well, I got to tell you, when you see Aladdin, there's certain his dialogue in Aladdin will just captivate you. Again, dark, conflicted characters, and he really focused on that part of him. He didn't take the characters for granted, like Sam Sakar. Sam made sure that he did a lot of character development you have the Magnificent Seven there too, the Wild Bunch there, you have the Wild Bunch. And he made sure that each person's character resonated. You knew who these people were. At the end of the day, Arthur and it's Lancelot,
Well, let me ask you, as a new publisher, and I'm sure as a comic fan, I think you've been aware when it comes to new publishers, sometimes books, are late, and that kind of hurts things. From a production standpoint, where do all the books stand? I mean, are all the issues of Calibur pretty much locked away, and Hercules, where you're going to be able to hit a monthly schedule? What is the scheduling plan for the issues?
Oh, you're supposed to do that once a month? I'm really fucked then. I'm shutting down my company tomorrow. Jesus. No. We're so on schedule, it's a joke. That's why we started it earlier.
Okay.
That's why we committed earlier, gave the artist, the writer, more time, and... We're printing two books at once, issue 1 and 2, and we're definitely going to be, as a matter of fact, we're going to be in the stores. We could have been in the stores May 7th and May 15th. We're in the stores May 1st. Actually, we're in the stores 4 days before May.
Okay. Oh, that's great.
So we'll be right there on Free Comic Book Day.
Yes.
Before, you know, we're gonna be like that on the majority of our stuff right at the beginning of the month.
Well, congratulations on what I see so far, and the first two books are coming out then right after Free Comic Book Day, that first week in May. But first, you should be looking for the Ashcan that comes out in Free Comic Book Day. That'll give you teases of the whole Radical line.
Yep.
And then
absolutely, you'll see all of that May 3rd, and that'll give you our line, and it'll give you a better understanding, a greater understanding of our partners, Imaginary. You know, they're more than just a bunch of designers and artists. They're also content creators as well. And that's going to serve two purposes. It'll profile us, Radical, and profile Imaginary.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing those in coming up, and keep your eyes out on the stands for Caliber and Hercules and the entire
Great.
Radical line for the year.
God, appreciate it, man.
Barry Levine of Radical Publishing. I'm telling you, two very good debut books, Hercules and Caliber, each only $1, available this month. And make sure you check out that Ashcan preview that Radical Publishing will be featuring this weekend during Free Comic Book Day. That's all the time we have for Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. This is John Suntris. Don't forget, Word Balloon can be found all over the Internet. We're at, of course, newsarama.com. You can find the podcast at iTunes if you search for Word Balloon, or comic books, or any way you want to look for the podcast. You should be able to find us. We're also at myspace.com, comicspace.com. And as always, if you'd like to ask me any questions or give me any comments via email, I'm always available, john@wordballoon.com. Thanks again for listening. More great guests coming up in the month of May. Make sure you keep it tuned to Word Balloon. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2008.